Hello and welcome to the Much More Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you be more, to be able to reach your fullest potential, and then to be able to give more in terms of that potential. I am your host, Mark Miller, and I'm excited to bring you this one. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Much More Podcast. I'm really excited for this one. The guest that we're speaking to today, she's just incredible. She's a divorced women's coach, a marriage family coach, speaker, and songwriter. She loves to read and review books in the spare time. She's an award-winning entrepreneur, a philanthropist. She believes in the power of connection and building community. As a divorced mom of five, she has used her pain and her faith to transform herself into a woman of purpose. She has a philosophy that we divorce ourselves long before we divorce our partners, which is so profound. So out of this, she empowers women to overcome their past hurt, to reconnect with themselves, their purpose, and evolve into the healthiest versions of themselves. It's because of all these things that I personally view Daya as one of the most puissant women and empowerment coaches that you can find. Ms. Daya, welcome to the Much More Podcast. I'm so grateful that you are here. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about you for the audience. Like, I know I've just shared this, but tell us a little bit more about you, what you've got going on right now.
So as you mentioned, I'm a women's empowerment coach. I'm also a host of a podcast and where I get to connect with people. I'm very passionate about speaking with people from all walks of life. I think it's important to bring to light what others are doing. It's part of what makes me feel successful and bright. I actually founded a course, since you mentioned about me, you know, helping women, divorced women, called My Second Chance. I'm launching it June 1st of this year. And it's a course that it's an 8-week live course that's designed to help women reconnect with themselves. As you mentioned, my philosophy is we divorce ourselves long before we divorce our partners. And with that, I like to redefine the word partner, because a lot of times when we hear divorce and partners, we think marriage. Now, a partner can be a husband or a life partner. It can be a job, a boss, you know, a work situation. People who are workaholics, they don't have a life. They divorce themselves. They check out. It could be some sort of toxic family dynamics. For women that are Christians, you could be partnering up with the enemy, believing lies about yourself and about what's going on around you. When we divorce ourselves, we remove ourselves from the equation of self-care. You know, we stop loving ourselves. We start putting other people before ourselves. You know, we start putting them first and forgetting about taking care of us. And in reality, for us to better serve another, we need to make sure that we are in check. We need to make sure that we're feeling loved, that we're feeling enough, that we're feeling deserving. And so I became very passionate within my own journey, because that actually happened to me. Once I started realizing that I wanted a different life, I felt, well, for me to have a different life, I'm going to have to do some things differently. And that the first thing that came to mind was, I need to get myself right. I need to take care of me.
Quite profound, right? And I 100% agree with you, is that we need to work on ourselves and be more for ourselves in order to be more for others around us. But you have been on quite a journey. You've experienced a lot of things, a lot of hurt and a lot of pain. And how did you navigate that journey? Because I can imagine it must have been emotionally taxing, physically taxing. I can only imagine how much energy it takes to raise five humans that are reliant on you, let alone going on all the things that you have done. And you've also had some amazing experiences. I see that you're a singer, songwriter, philanthropist. You've won awards. You've accomplished quite a fair bit, but that whole journey must have taken from you in some ways. And how did you resolve it? How did you work in that?
You know, it's interesting. It's an interesting question. I think that the truth is that, you know, while you're experiencing life, you're not really looking at what you're doing. You're just living it. In hindsight, you know, when I look back, you know, in fact, in about 2012, there was an article written in my town magazine about some of the things that I had done up to that point. And when I looked back, I thought, wow, I didn't realize I had done so much, because in the moment, you know, I'm not thinking I'm accomplishing. In the moment, I'm just living. I'm going where the opportunities are. So for me, it wasn't it didn't take much thinking. I mean, I wasn't concerned about what I was doing or thinking, how am I going to get this done or that done? I just went with it. And so I experienced life pretty much as life happened. Looking back, I can say, wow, I did a lot. You know, how did I do this? Sometimes I even question myself. But I think that what happens for most of us is that we just don't think while we're doing. In other words, raising five children, there was a time when I had two teenagers and three small children, right? So did I think about it? No. Looking into the future, you know, when I was just had two kids and I was saying, well, how am I ever going to do this? How am I ever going to have more children or put this together? I was married, obviously married twice and a single mom for 10 years. And when I remarried, I thought, how am I ever going to be able to do this? Now, if you fast forward to now and you see my children together and they are now from ages 13 to 34, it's almost like, how did I not see this? You know, how did I not understand that it would have just come together? I mean, they're absolutely amazing with each other. They love one another so much. And I don't know if it's something I did even. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it happens. So I think life actually unfolds as it should. We're just a part in it. As much as an observer as I was a part of it, but I don't think I ever sat and thought, how did I do this? Or how am I going to do this? There was really no planning. I just went with it.
It's also about the lessons that you extract from it, because as you were speaking, just reminded me of a quote from Tony Robbins of all people, but he says that life happens for you and not necessarily to you. I'm 30 now. I'm trying to cultivate a way of just retaining the lessons that I learn and like really engaging with it. And because that's what memories are there for. Memories are there for us to learn lessons and not repeat the same mistakes. But also mistakes make us, in some weird way, who we are, because it's how you learn from your mistakes. It can either make you bitter and it can make you resentful and it can make you hate X, Y, and Z, or it can make you grow into a better person. I don't want to make that mistake again. And I want to ask you, you've gone through a journey, right? And you said that you kind of like let it unfold, which I do think in a way is healthy, because then you're opening yourself up to the opportunities that are there. But at the same sense, you also want to learn lessons. So how did you choose what lessons to retain and what other lessons to let go of?
That's an interesting question. What comes to mind when I hear you ask me that question, two words, evolve and repeat, because you hear a lot of people say this. I actually saw this on Instagram and I didn't understand or agree with it, to be honest with you. It says you either evolve or you repeat. And that made me think of, well, obviously talking about, you know, an evolution or repetition, as there are lessons in there for us to grasp. And what I've come to realize with experience is that, yes, you repeat. In other words, like you said, we can repeat a lot of our mistakes. And obviously, the objective is not to repeat the mistakes and learn from them. But here's the thing. When you are evolving involves some repetition. Yeah. And I think the reason why that is because if you are repeating something, it's because you haven't fully grasped what it is that you're supposed to get out of it. So many of us will repeat a certain behavior or a certain action in search of something because we don't quite know how to get there. The repetition, I believe, it's the way that by which spiritually we come to the understanding of self. It's an opportunity to look at yourself. It's not so much an external thing. We're repeating something because there's a point of origin within us that's resurfacing. Something that needs healing, something that needs work. So to expect to evolve without flaws is absolutely a scam. You know, we need to learn that, you know, in order for us to evolve, we must repeat. It's just the way that you're going to repeat it, but you're now repeating with self-awareness. So it's for you to go back and look, okay, I did this again. So why is that? What do I need to see that I haven't yet? I also like to say evolving is absolutely a decision. Don't wake up and say, oh, I just evolved. You know, it's not something like yeah. that. You absolutely have to wake up and make a decision that you want to stop repeating the mistakes that you have made. And how do you get there? It's almost like it's a place of vulnerability, a place of humility. Have to really let your guard down and say, okay, I want to grow. I want a different life. How do I do this? And so I think the lessons that we learn aren't chosen lessons. They're lessons, like you said, if life is meant and designed to happen for us, not to us, there are lessons that are absolutely there for a reason.
I do like the fact that you're saying that there has to be repetition to sharpen something. We evolve by continuous habit, and repetition is building up that habit to get us from point A to point B. Bruce Lee was the one that said, I do not fear a man who can practice 1,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who practices one kick 1,000 times. So in other words, it's getting down to that point of like, what are you perfecting? What is it that you do need to repeat in order to move forward? And with a quote like, either we evolve or repeat, I think what his intention was, we're going to just repeat the mistakes instead of evolving, right? Because there are lessons to move away from them, as I've said and as you've said, but it's also trusting your ability to maybe have to repeat it again and again in order to extract all that you can from that scenario. And I think through your journey, you probably have been an example to many. But leading on from that, I want to ask you, who has been somebody who might have been a work, so something that you've read or somebody that you've really looked up to that has helped you evolve and guide you into the woman you are today?
Absolutely. I have a few people, but what comes to mind primarily, first and foremost, my mom. My mom was an extraordinary woman. I was adopted at the age of 5 months with my twin sister, and I had an extraordinary mom. I mean, she was an orthodontist and a pediatric dentist, extraordinary. And her whole legacy was about giving. And so that really impacted me. And just to give you a very small example, at age 4, I remember going down the hill below where we lived to this poverty-stricken community. And my mom used to say, we have a lot of toys that are gently used. So at Christmas, you get new toys, but we take a time in the afternoon to go donate toys, gently used toys to the poor communities. And I remember dressing up, you know, putting a cute little dress on and my little shoes on. That was my holiday shoes. And when I got to the bottom of the hill, I noticed a little boy with shorts and no shoes. So I asked my mom, why doesn't he have shoes? She says, well, they don't have shoes. And I remember I was 4 years old. So, and I have the memory of sitting with that thought, not understanding. It's still not understanding why. But the following year, I put on my little dress again, but this time I went without shoes. You see, in the spirit of giving, it was more about not just giving physically, but giving the comfort so that they would relate to me and not want what I had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost like, I feel like as a child, I understood that in some way very early on, that you're not just going to give financially or an object. You can give a feeling of relatedness, you know, so you don't have shoes, but I'm not wearing shoes, so that you feel comfortable being with me. I oftentimes say that love in its purest form is like that. It's what God instilled in us as children. There's an element of purity and innocence that we carry that gets to be displayed very early on, even if we're not aware of it. So my mom really impacted me in many ways, you know, and throughout life, just the way that she took part in helping others and including others. I don't think I'm quite like her because I look up to her so much, you know, but I do see a lot of parts of her in me, within me. And then I have many women mentors that I'd like to just mention the name, Dr. Michelle McKinney-Hammond, who is an author, pastor, speaker, Emmy Award-winning host, Pastor Real Talk Kim. She's known as Real Talk Kim, Pastor Kim Jones, Dr. Cindy Trim, who is one of my mentors. I attended Kingdom School of Ministry in 2020. I'm the class of 2020. I'm very lucky. I feel blessed that the women that I look up to, the women that I surround myself with, are just amazing, mostly because they do a lot, but they have an element that my mom also possessed, which was emotional humility, spiritual humility. And that is where I draw from the most.
And that example of humility, I know, is super profound in helping create and cultivate connection between people. And I'm just astounded at your young age that you're like, I want to take my shoes off to show that I can relate to you in some way and trying to connect on that level. Because there's not many kids that, especially at that age, it's almost like the selfishness, but it also goes towards who your mom is, right? And the principles that she was bestowing upon you and guiding you in and just mentoring you in that way. And then you found women mentors from your mom all the way through. And listening, I was like, oh, it's only women mentors, which is perfectly fine. But I'm like, it's great to have women empower women as well, right? Like, it's the world needs more of that. I think the world just needs more empowerment as is, right? More building up and more guarding. But just circling back to the humility, because I've thought about humility quite a bit. There was an essence where I almost had like a false element of humility, because I always thought I'd have to put myself less in everything that I do in order to be humble. When I read Mere Christianity from C.S. Lewis, he quotes in there saying that humility isn't thinking less of yourself. And that's what I was doing, but thinking about myself less, right? So it doesn't mean that I have to put myself down in order to be humble. But a lot of people feel like that's what they need to do in order to combat the inverse of that, which is pride. So I guess my question here is, how do we empower people to step into what is true humility?
You know, humility doesn't come without authenticity, number one. You know, in order to be humble, you must be genuine and authentic. And that is because being authentic and genuine involves self-awareness. You have to know who you are in order to value who you are. One of the things that Dr. Michelle McKinney-Hammond talks about in her teachings, you know, when we talk about self-value, is that there are standards and there are expectations, right? So expectations, she says, is external. And that involves when you expect from others or from life events, if your expectation is very high, you're bound to feel a little disappointed. And in my opinion, even come out on the other end a little bit entitled, feeling a little bit entitled. But then she talks about having high standards. When you have high standards, the expectations of yourself is high. You see, it's internal. It's not external. What you expect of yourself, the things you can control, the things you can decide for yourself, creates that high expectation, high standards. She says that with high standards, it's internal. And I like to say with high standards, we also feel deserving, not entitled. You see, because then you have an understanding of yourself. You have an understanding of where you stand. You have an understanding of what you deserve. It's different than expecting from others, from things, and then feeling, well, why didn't I get that, right? It's saying, standing in a different place and say, I deserve that. For us to be humble, we need to be authentic first. We need to know who we are. And in order to know who we are, we need to know our values. Our values, our morals, our belief systems. We need to keep our standards high.
It's quite an interesting connection that you've made between having high standards and being humble. I don't think I've ever drawn that parallel, to be fair. So I'm just trying to like play it through in my head and trying for it to make a bit of sense to me and my situation as well, because part and parcel of what I love having a podcast is I get to learn from people who think so differently to me and just get new insights, right? And in order to be humble, right, you've got to not necessarily, like Lewis said, don't think less of yourself. So in order to not think less of yourself, to move into true humility is understand your own standards, understand what you're going to stand up for, understand what your morals, your values, and principles are. And I've always said to people that your morals, values, principles is the perfect rudder to guide your life. If you disconnected in some way, chances are it might be affecting one of those three.
I must say, though, that now let's ask this question. Does everyone who understands who they are, does everyone who is self-aware, humble? I don't know if that's true. I think that, but I do know this, in order to be humble, you really have to know who you are. You have to be self-aware. You have to be authentic and genuine. I feel that most people that are genuine and authentic, they display humility in some way.
Okay, so what is the process of becoming empowered?
Well, so it starts with a desire, right? That's the first step. You have to desire to become empowered. And normally when people are looking for empowerment, they're in source of some kind of healing. It's understanding that there's an area of your life that you feel the need to do something different, right? And that's where it starts. It starts with desire. Now, when I say community, I don't want to scare people and say that you need to be involved with 100 people. Sometimes community is one mentor. Mm-hmm. Community is another person or a little Bible study group. Or for people who are not Christians, it could be a book club. Community is that one place that you feel that you can be yourself, that you can be authentic, you can be broken if you are, and people will still hold you in a place of support and love and understanding. See, we must find that community. The community is the foundation, you know, that the hands that hold you, you know, the arms that will embrace you, people that will take you as you are. Community isn't a big, scary thing that involves a lot of things. You don't have to be attending all these seminars and reading 85,000 books, but it's that one little thing you do outside of yourself that bonds you to either one person or a group of people, even if it's a small group of people. It could be, you know, for a couple of years, I had three friends that we got together every Thursday morning. We decided, you know what, every Thursday morning, we call it Thankful Thursdays at 11 a.m. From 11 to 1, we used to get together downstairs in my family room, and we would decide some days we're going to just laugh, tell jokes. One day we're just going to, you know, talk about projects we're doing or share stories about our kids. You know, every day we did a little something different, but it was in that space that I started feeling less alone. There were days when we talked about our pain, you know, our struggles with our marriages, and, you know, it was that space that I said, okay, it's safe for me to speak about my feelings and not be judged and feel understood and feel that I can relate. So I think all of those things are important. So when I talk about empowerment, I talk about self-care, right? So I give actually four distinct elements of self-care. And obviously the physical is the very first one that we talk about because it's the obvious, right? I mean, it took me years to even give myself permission to go get a massage because I felt like, oh my God, I'm going to a massage. It's expensive. I've taken money for my kids. And then I said, no, I need to be relaxed. I need to feel good about myself. So the physical would be obviously the obvious. A manicure, pedicure, we are creative. You know, we could do get coffee with your girlfriends or read a book and make some popcorn or take a bubble bath, light up a candle. All of those things are physical. Then I go into choice, right? And choice, people think it's more of a conscious decision, but if you think about it, it has to do with self-care because you choose to allow yourself. You choose to give yourself permission to get help. For example, this is where you would hire a coach, or some people need a little more than coaching. You know, maybe they need therapy or they need some physical, like maybe it's something physical, hormonal. They need to make a doctor's appointment. You make a choice to take care of yourself. Then you have obviously self-preservation, which is a big one for me. Self-preservation, I like talking about it because it's sometimes more important than reconciliation. For women in particular, we tend to feel that we have to agree with everybody and make sure everybody's taken care of. And we have to make sure we make amends with things that are broken. And sometime in the healing journey, to me, became obvious that I did not have to agree with people and certainly didn't have to reconcile in certain things. Self-preservation was more important. This is what we get to say no. This does not serve me. And it's okay. You know, I don't want to accept that. I'm not accepting that analogy that you just gave me or something you said about me or something you want me to do for you. No, I can't do it. You know, and it's okay. So self-preservation is a part of self-care. And the last one is the obvious, which is what we just talked about, community, but I call it tribe. In the tribe, you align yourself with people that will hold you accountable, number one. Okay. It's really important because a lot of people think that you can have that one friend that you talk to, but here's what happens. Unfortunately, because the way people love us sometimes, they will allow us to do what I call toxic venting. We start talking, repeating, saying the same things over and over. We never find a way out. And the person is willing to listen, to support us and love us, but they don't know how to ask us the questions that might lead us out of, maybe distract us from it, you know, maybe lead us into looking at it with a different set of eyes. This is why it's so important to have a tribe of people. And I'm not saying that everyone in the tribe is a trained professional, okay? But maybe these are women that are dancing to a different type of drum, you know, that their hearts beat in a different way, which is all for positivity. Yes, we get it. We're hurt. We've struggled. You can talk to them, but then they're like, okay, let's get you going. They tap into your beauty and they bring that out in you. You know, we've heard people say some people bring out the worst in you. There's such a community out there that bring out the best in you. These three ladies that I used to talk to, we call ourselves the butterflies. That place of relatedness was important. It made us feel happy and whole, even though we didn't solve the problems. It wasn't about solving the problems. It was about just being able to relate. And the other thing that happens in a tribe is you start to become, to feel useful. Why? Because, see, now you're allowing people to help you. So when they ask you for help, you're going to help them. And then you become important. There is a whole sense of validation that is birthed out of community. because you start to feel that you can be just as of help to someone as they have been for you. And in fact, as hard as it is for women to ask for help, because I used to be that way, I don't want to bother anybody. Guess what? Now you've been there for someone else. When you need help, it's going to be a lot easier to ask for it because you've done it for them. So a lot happens in the realm of this tribe space, you know, the community. And again, super important to align yourself. It doesn't have to be 20, 30, 40 people. It could be two people, three people, or one person to start, but that safe place that you can go to. Process of healing, the process of empowerment begins with this idea that there is a certain way for you to tap into the places of self-care. Okay. Empowerment begins with healing, self-care, self-love. All of those things are part of it. So it's not one thing, right? It's a group of things.
I appreciate the fact that you acknowledge the holistic nature of empowerment, because empowerment transcends just like being empowered at work, being empowered to your own voice, right? Like standing firm and holding that space and that ground. And then I love the fact that you are saying that there's an accountability that comes with your community, right? You're finding the right people to speak into your life, because your community, your tribe, as you say, you're giving them permission to speak into your life, which I think people should revere, because I do believe that words hold a lot of power, and someone may just say the wrong thing at the wrong time to you, or it could even be the right thing at the wrong time and you won't take it as the right way. So you've got to understand people that understand you and your nuance. I think that can be so powerful. And I love what you call your group, the butterflies, right? And just,
yeah,
it just sounds like a beautiful space, right? For you as women to get together. I look at that and I'm like, I think there is power in women coming together and helping each other, because women by nature is agreeable. I don't think you should fight the agreeableness, because there's a lot of things like you should become more masculine. I don't think feminine energy should become masculine energy. And this can become a whole like different debate, because there is a push in the world for women to take on more masculine traits. And I'm like, what cost is that going to be? And for men to actually become more feminine in their traits as well, like almost like reverse the roles. And I mean, if you look throughout history, pink used to be a masculine color and blue was a feminine color. And then it's what? Like it's, so there are certain things that change, but I believe that there is an inherent masculine energy and inherent feminine energy. And part of feminine energy, from what research shows, is that women tend to be more agreeable. And I think that women are trying to fight that. And I'm like, no, but there's, to me, there's power to be agreeable in the sense that there is power in nurture. And I think part of agreeability is nurturing. Not necessarily saying yes to everything and putting yourself less.
What you said, I used to say that a lot, that we're nurturers by nature. You know, it's something that we really can't extract out of our being. And I wanted to make a mention about, you know, when we're talking about empowerment, because obviously I said, you know, the very first few elements, the very first few steps, we can't forget language. Okay. Language is really important. So the way you talk about yourself, the way you speak about others. And so in the course, My Second Chance, you know, we have four modules that are going to lead people into developing this ability to even give themselves permission to exercise those four things I just talked about. Then we go into affirmations. We go into, because we talk about a new narrative, right? How important it is to create a new narrative about yourself and about the events around you. And we do this, I do this with a very realistic approach. I don't believe in telling lies about when you're trying to recreate yourself. In other words, if you're tired, you can't say, oh, I'm great. I'm like energized. No, you're tired. Yeah. But then I find something to attach to the tiredness that involves a blessing, that involves something good. So I am so tired, but I get to sleep in a cozy bed tonight. You see, and that brings that immediate comfort, and it shifts you from the stress of being tired to looking forward to lying down. You know what I mean? And it changes the energy altogether. As you know, gratitude is a big thing when it comes to healing and empowerment and all that stuff. Now, so we talk about affirmations, you know, good words to say to yourself. We go into personal branding, right? Because we are ourselves a brand in the way that we are. And even though people think, well, personal brand is you have to have a business or a book or a blog or a website, not so. We are a personal brand as people. And so, for example, for me, anyone who knows me knows right off the bat how spiritual I am. Everybody says, you're so spiritual. You're so like inspiring. And but that's not something I even think about. It's just the way I've been all my life. I don't know how to be any different. I've learned to express myself along the way to make that even more obvious now that I'm older. And so we do that part, you know, which is a personal branding. We have a guest speaker that is a personal branding expert who comes in and it's going to teach about the blueprint of a person. You know, you, who are you as a brand? Then we have a certified nutritionist that's going to come in and talk about, you know, when you want to feel well and do well, you have to eat right and exercise. And we're not talking about becoming athletes here, but having a plan that works for you. That's also a part. It goes into the category of physical self-care, but a little deeper because now you're making a commitment. There will be a rhythm to the way you eat, the way you sleep, the way you exercise. And then last but not least, because of the season we're in with the pandemic, I brought in a guest expert that's going to develop a stretching and breathing routine. See, when I had COVID last year, it was a struggle right after the event to breathe. So I had to learn how to breathe while stretching just to develop my lungs again, you know, so I could breathe in a normal pattern again and take a full breath without feeling that I was going to pass out the next minute. So I decided to incorporate that as a part of the course. I think it's a tool that we need to have, learn how to breathe and stretch to minimize stress. And what I asked her to do is to design a little routine where people could do either sitting in front of their computer, because a lot of people are at work, don't have the option to go work out. Or they could take a stand, you know, stand next to their chair and do that, the same thing in a modified version to give people the opportunity to reset themselves every hour. One of the things that I had to do while healing for my own self is I remember how overwhelmed I felt when I was depressed and had PTSD. And I used to say, oh, gosh, I need to work on just starting over every hour. So I would make smaller segments of time during the day where I would take a deep breath at the top of the hour and say, everything's okay. I got this. Now I'm going to do just this. Focus on what's due the next hour. I got to make a phone call. Because otherwise I'll be thinking, oh God, I got to make dinner. I haven't started, you know, and I would get overwhelmed. So teaching people how to pace themselves, divide the days into segments and create dynamics that allow you to reset yourself. So the breathing, stretching was a part of that routine for me when I got sick. So all of those elements and tools, you see, we create a little toolbox and of course, people are going to gravitate towards one thing more than the other, but that's okay. Everybody can focus on more or create new habits, you know, create new things for themselves, which is really also important. So in the whole course, people will realize that you're allowed to create, to recreate yourself in a way that serves you. And only you know that what that is. I mean, I can give you a certain guideline of some things to do and certain tools that you can use. You're free to create, recreate yourself and actually also reconnect with who you were. When you talked about women as, you know, this element of nurture that we have, right? And how sometimes we're pushed to suppress that or should be more like this way, more masculine energy, more feminine energy. I learned something from Dr. Michelle McKinney-Hammond that really impacted me. She has a book called The Power of Being a Woman. And in this book, she talks about women being the influence where the man is the authority. And she said something so beautiful. She said, you know, where I grew up, my father was the king, but my mother was powerful. You see, because she said she influenced him. And the way she influenced him actually made his authority stronger, you see, and more obvious. So it is that, again, to me, this involves so much humility, you know, for us to be influential, for us to inspire others, for us to empower other people. We really need to come from a place of self-awareness, and we have to be strong enough to be humble and vulnerable. We have to be strong enough to be humble and vulnerable. Because otherwise, people would not relate.
Dea, thank you so much for joining us here on the Much More podcast. I've just been sitting here just taking it all in, listening, and I'm going to now straight after this go take my notepad out and write down some of the lessons that I've learned from you. Thank you so much for the gift of your wisdom.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me here. I really enjoyed talking with you. You're so deep and so profound, the things you say. And so it was a pleasure. People can find me. The best way to find me is on Instagram at Dea Ministry. That spells D-E-A and the word ministry. And then go on my link tree and all of my stuff is there, from my YouTube channel, my music, all the products that I endorse, my course, my podcast, everything is on there. So it's the best place at Dea Ministry on Instagram.
Yeah, I really do appreciate it. And I hope that you have a blessed afternoon.
Same to you.